Chapter 112. Assuredly. Y, I have not mentioned, Agnes, said I, a little embarrassed, that Dora is rather difficult to I would not, for the world, say, to rely upon, because she is the soul of purity and truth, but rather difficult to I hardly know how to express it, really, Agnes. She is a timid little thing, and easily disturbed and frightened. Some time ago, before her father's death, when I thought it right to mention to her, but I'll tell you, if you will bear with me, how it was. Accordingly, I told Agnes about my declaration of poverty, about the cookery book, the housekeeping accounts, and all the rest of it. Oh, Trotwood. She remonstrated, with a smile. Just your old headlong way. You might have been in earnest in striving to get on in the world without being so very sudden with a timid, loving, inexperienced girl. Poor Dora. I never heard such sweet forbearing kindness expressed in a voice as she expressed in making this reply. It was as if I had seen her admiringly and tenderly embracing Dora and tacitly reproving me by her considerate protection for my hot haste in fluttering that little heart. It was as if I had seen Dora, in all her fascinating artlessness, caressing Agnes, and thanking her, and coaxingly appealing against me, and loving me with all her childish innocence. I felt so grateful to Agnes, and admired her so. I saw those two together, in a bright perspective, such well-associated friends, each adorning the other so much. What ought I to do then, Agnes? I inquired, after looking at the fire a little while. What would it be right to do? Said Agnes, that the honorable course to take would be to write to those two ladies. Don't you think that any secret course is an unworthy one? Yes. If you think so, said one. I am poorly qualified to judge of such matters, replied Agnes, with a modest hesitation, but I certainly feel in short, I feel that your being secret and clandestine is not being like yourself. Like myself, in the too high opinion you have of me, Agnes, I am afraid, said one. Like yourself, in the candor of your nature, she returned. And therefore I would write to those two ladies. I would relate, as plainly and as openly as possible, all that has taken place, and I would ask their permission to visit sometimes, at their house. Considering that you are young, and striving for a place in life, I think it would be well to say that you would readily abide by any conditions they might impose upon you. I would entreat them not to dismiss your request without a reference to Dora, and to discuss it with her when they should think the time suitable. I would not be too vehement, said Agnes, gently, or propose too much. I would trust to my fidelity and perseverance and to Dora. But if they were to frighten Dora again, Agnes, by speaking to her, said one. And if Dora were to cry, and say nothing about me, is that likely? Inquired Agnes, with the same sweet consideration in her face. God bless her, she is as easily scared as a bird, said one. It might be. Or if the two Miss Spenlow's elderly ladies of that sort are odd characters sometimes, should not be likely persons to address in that way. I don't think, Trotwood, returned Agnes, raising her soft eyes to mine, I would consider that. Perhaps it would be better only to consider whether it is right to do this, and, if it is, to do it. I had no longer any doubt on the subject. With a lightened heart, though with a profound sense of the weighty importance of my task, I devoted the whole afternoon to the composition of the draft of this letter, for which great purpose, Agnes relinquished her desk to me. But first I went downstairs to see Mr. Wickfield and Uriah Heep. I found Uriah in possession of a new, plaster-smelling office, built out in the garden, looking extraordinarily mean, in the midst of a quantity of books and papers. He received me in his usual fawning way, and pretended not to have heard of my arrival from Mr. Micawber, a pretense I took the liberty of disbelieving. He accompanied me into Mr. Wickfield's room, which was the shadow of its former self having been divested of a variety of conveniences, for the accommodation of the new partner, and stood before the fire, warming his back, and shaving his chin with his bony hand, while Mr. Wickfield and I exchanged greetings. "You stay with us, Trotwood, while you remain in Canterbury?" said Mr. Wickfield, not without a glance at Uriah for his approval. "Is there room for me?" said one. "I am sure, Master Copperfield, I should say Mister, but the other comes so natural," said Uriah. "I would turn out of your old room with pleasure, if it would be agreeable." said Mr. Wickfield. "Why should you be inconvenienced? There's another room. There's another room." returned Uriah, with a grin, "I should really be delighted." To cut the matter short, I said I would have the other room, or none at all, so it was settled that I should have the other room, and, taking my leave of the firm until dinner, I went upstairs again. I had hoped to have no other companion than Agnes, but Mrs. Heep had asked permission to bring herself and her knitting near the fire, in that room, on pretense of its having an aspect more favorable for her rheumatics, as the wind then was, than the drawing room or dining parlor, though I could almost have consigned her to the mercies of the wind on the topmost pinnacle of the cathedral. Without remorse, I made a virtue of necessity, and gave her a friendly salutation. "I'm humbly thankful to you, sir," said Mrs. Heep, "in acknowledgement of my inquiries concerning her health, but I'm only pretty well. I haven't much to boast of. If I could see my Uriah well settled in life, I couldn't expect much more, I think. How do you think my Uri looking, sir?" I thought him looking as villainous as ever, and I replied that I saw no change in him. "Oh, don't you think he's changed?" said Mrs. Heep. "There I must humbly beg leave to differ from you. Don't you see a thinness in him?" "Not more than usual," I replied. "Don't you though?" said Mrs. Heep. "But you don't take notice of him with a mother's eye." His mother's eye was an evil eye to the rest of the world, I thought, as it met mine, howsoever affectionate to him, and I believe she and her son were devoted to one another. It passed me, and went on to Agnes. "Don't you see a wasting, and a wearing in him, Miss Wickfield?" inquired Mrs. Heep. "No," said Agnes, quietly pursuing the work on which she was engaged. "You are too solicitous about him. He is very well." Mrs. Heep, with a prodigious sniff, resumed her knitting. She never left off, or left us for a moment. I had arrived early in the day, and we had still 3 or 4 hours before dinner, but she sat there, plying her knitting needles as monotonously as an hourglass might have poured out its sands. She sat on one side of the fire, I sat at the desk in front of it. A little beyond me, on the other side, sat Agnes. Whensoever, slowly pondering over my letter, I lifted up my eyes, and meeting the thoughtful face of Agnes, saw it clear, and beam encouragement upon me, with its own angelic expression. I was conscious presently of the evil eye passing me, and going on to her, and coming back to me again, and dropping furtively upon the knitting. What the knitting was, I don't know, not being learned in that art, but it looked like a net, and as she worked away with those Chinese chopsticks of knitting needles, she showed in the firelight like an ill-looking enchantress, bulked as yet by the radiant goodness opposite, but getting ready for a cast of her net by and by. At dinner she maintained her watch, with the same unwinking eyes. After dinner, her son took his turn, and when Mr. Wickfield, himself, and I were left alone together, leered at me, and writhed until I could hardly bear it. In the drawing room, there was the mother knitting and watching again. All the time that Agnes sang and played, the mother sat at the piano. Once she asked for a particular ballad, which she said Yuri, who was yawning in a great chair, doted on, and at intervals she looked round at him, and reported to Agnes that he was in raptures with the music. But she hardly ever spoke. I question if she ever did without making some mention of him. It was evident to me that this was the duty assigned to her. This lasted until bedtime. To have seen the mother and son, like two great bats hanging over the whole house, and darkening it with their ugly forms, made me so uncomfortable that I would rather have remained downstairs, knitting and all, than gone to bed. I hardly got any sleep. Next day the knitting and watching began again, and lasted all day. I had not an opportunity of speaking to Agnes for 10 minutes. I could barely show her my letter. I proposed to her to walk out with me, but Mrs. Heap repeatedly complaining that she was worse, Agnes charitably remained within, to bear her company. Towards the twilight I went out by myself, musing on what I ought to do, and whether I was justified in withholding from Agnes any longer what Uriah Heap had told me in London, for that began to trouble me again, very much. I had not walked out far enough to be quite clear of the town, upon the Ramsgate Road, where there was a good path, when I was hailed, through the dust, by somebody behind me. The shambling figure, and the scanty greatcoat, were not to be mistaken. I stopped, and Uriah Heep came up. "Well?" said one. "How fast you walk?" said he. "My legs are pretty long, but you've given them quite a job." "Where are you going?" said one. "I am going with you, Master Copperfield, if you'll allow me the pleasure of a walk with an old acquaintance." Saying this, with a jerk of his body, which might have been either propitiatory or derisive, he fell in 2 step beside me. "Uriah!" said I, as civilly as I could, after a silence. "Master Copperfield!" said Uriah. "To tell you the truth, at which you will not be offended, I came out to walk alone, because I have had so much company." He looked at me sideways, and said with his hardest grin, "You mean mother?" "Why yes, I do," said one. "Ah! But you know we're so very humble," he returned. "And having such a knowledge of our own humbleness, we must really take care that we're not pushed to the wall by them as isn't humble. All stratagems are fair in love, sir." Raising his great hands until they touched his chin, he rubbed them softly, and softly chuckled, looking as like a malevolent baboon, I thought, as anything human could look. "You see," he said, still hugging himself in that unpleasant way, and shaking his head at me, "you're quite a dangerous rival, Master Copperfield. You always was, you know. Do you set a watch upon Miss Wickfield, and make her home no home, because of me?" said one. "Oh, Master Copperfield. Those are very harsh words," he replied. "Put my meaning into any words you like," said one. "You know what it is, Uriah, as well as I do." "Oh no. You must put it into words," he said. "Oh, really? I couldn't myself." "Do you suppose," said I, constraining myself to be very temperate and quiet with him, "on account of Agnes, that I regard Miss Wickfield otherwise than as a very dear sister?" "Well, Master Copperfield," he replied, "you perceive I am not bound to answer that question. You may not, you know. But then, you see, you may." Anything to equal the low cunning of his visage, and of his shadowless eyes without the ghost of an eyelash, I never saw. "Come then," said one. For the sake of Miss Wickfield apostrophe, my Agnes. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he exclaimed, with a sickly angular contortion of himself. Would you be so good as call her Agnes, Master Copperfield? Apostrophe, apostrophe, for the sake of Agnes Wickfield, heaven bless her. Apostrophe, apostrophe, thank you for that blessing, Master Copperfield. Apostrophe, he interposed. I will tell you what I should, under any other circumstances, as soon have thought of telling to Jack Ketch. Apostrophe, to who, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Uriah, stretching out his neck, and shading his ear with his hand. To the hangman, apostrophe, I returned. The most unlikely person I could think of, apostrophe, though his own face had suggested the illusion quite as a natural sequence. I am engaged to another young lady. I hope that contents you. Apostrophe, upon your soul? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Uriah. I was about indignantly to give my assertion the confirmation he required, when he caught hold of my hand and gave it a squeeze. Oh, Master Copperfield! Apostrophe, apostrophe, he said. If you had only had the condescension to return my confidence when I poured out the fullness of my art the night I put you so much out of the way by sleeping before your sitting room fire, I never should have doubted you. As it is, I'm sure I'll take off Mother directly, and only to Abby. I know you'll excuse the precautions of affection, won't you? What a pity, Master Copperfield, that you didn't condescend to return my confidence. I'm sure I gave you every opportunity. But you never have condescended to me as much as I could have wished. I know you have never liked me as I have liked you. Apostrophe, apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.